about something which is immediately now, but really to take a bit of a longer arc on where cosmology is going that allows me to talk about different pieces of work I've been involved in, some of which are quite recent, but some of which are also quite old, around the general theme of not extending the cosmological model, which is something everyone likes to talk about and probably lots of people want to do, but people very, very seldom achieve. So the starting point I'm going to take is a very normal cosmology position, which is that we can explain our observational data extremely well, and we can do so with a phenomenological model that has very, very few parameters. And people will normally say that it's a six-parameter cosmological model which can fit the data well. So for example, if we look at the cosmic microwave background data here, the Planck 2018 temperature power spectrum, you can stick in a model that's supposed to predict this data. And if you've got six variable parameters which you adjust, you can fit this data extremely well. Exactly what form these six parameters take is open to debate, so different linear or non-linear combinations of parameters are used, but six of them should be independent combinations, and this is the particular version which appears in the Planck paper, which I'll come to in more detail. Now, it so happens that in cosmology at the moment, if you take these six parameters, you can pretty much explain all reliable data, whether it's cosmic microwave background or not. Hence, the standard cosmological model is a six-parameter model of this type. Though I'll put a few caveats on that later on as to exactly what these are. So, six-parameter model, lots and lots of data, lots of success. Now, the first thing to address is just why is it six parameters? Well, there's nothing special about six. How many parameters you need is just a matter of what observations you've decided you're going to try to fit. So the first thing you do whenever you're doing any kind of astronomy or cosmology is that you have to decide what you're going to try and explain and produce some models, and those models will presumably have some number of free parameters associated with them. And if those are not determined from first principles, your duty is then to try to measure these free parameters by finding the best fit to the data, usually by some likelihood technique or other. So for the cosmic microwave background, it turns out that these six parameters fit the data fairly well, and the ones you choose, this is slightly different to the list before, but equivalent. There are the densities of baryons and the cold dark matter. There's expansion rate by the Hubble constant, or it could be given as some kind of angular diameter distance to last scattering. Then there's the perturbations, which have an amplitude and a spectral index, and it appears we need both of those parameters. And finally, there's the optical depth that measures to what extent CMB photons rescatter on their way to us from the microwave background. And if you make a fit using these six parameters or some combinations of these, you'll fit the Planck data and other data extremely well. So that's normally what's meant by six parameters. However, if you're fitting different kinds of data, you might have slightly different views. So for example, I'm involved in the Dark Energy Survey project, which I'll talk about later. It doesn't have an optical depth because it doesn't have any CMB, but somehow they still manage to talk about a six-parameter model. And the reason they do that is that in DES, we decide to keep the sum of the neutrino masses also as a free parameter, whereas Planck chose to keep that at some minimal value, and it was a fixed quantity rather than something to be varied in their basic model. So there's a little bit of flexibility as to what different people mean by six parameters. In passing, I should also mention that when you fit the data, you're never actually fitting these six parameters. You're always fitting a much larger number of parameters because you may have to deal with things like systematic contamination for foregrounds in CMB measurements or models of intrinsic alignments in weak lensing measurements, et cetera, et cetera. You have a bunch of other parameters that you've just decided to say that you're not interested in and call nuisance parameters. And at the end of the day, you're going to marginalize over them and only advertise your results for the six parameters that you've declared to be your interesting parameters. So again, that can change the numbers depending what your context is. Working in the Planck satellite, so obviously what one person calls a nuisance might actually be someone else's signal. And one of the joys of working in the Planck collaboration was all of these people who thought that the cosmic microwave background was some pesky interference that was stopping them learning about the distribution of dust in our galaxy. But I'm coming from the cosmology side. Quite a few of you have heard me talk before, and I've used this slide quite a bit, so you may have seen it before. Just to summarize, the status of observational cosmology is a big success story, I think, by any stretch of the imagination. We can make precision measurements of many kinds. Cosmic microwave background is the most important for constraints, but lots of other kinds of observations which give the same results. We have a phenomenological model with these six parameters, measures the composition of the universe very accurately. Here's a typical picture where dark energy, dark matter, and ordinary matter are all measured to very high precision. And we also learned something about the young universe as well, because it looks a lot as if there was a period of inflation in the young universe. The two-parameter density perturbation model of a tilted adiabatic spectrum is very much what we expect from simple models of inflation and not what we expect from any rival models of the origin of structure. So observational cosmology and the phenomenology of it is great. It is, however, worth remembering here, especially at perimeter, where we're all very theoretical, that this was not the reason why theorists came into cosmology. We're supposed to understand the cosmological model, not just describe the cosmological model. And so the sobering slide looks like this. The status of theoretical cosmology is that we don't know why the universe is all matter and not antimatter. Move this to stop. Ah, no, I'm not. I keep getting blinded by my own slides. So I'm going to stand over here once that boots up again.
Pointer as well, you can use it.
Then I'll get confused because that's two hands. We don't know why the universe is all matter and not antimatter. We don't know what the dark matter is. We don't know what the dark energy is. And we don't know how inflation took place. So from a theoretical perspective, we have almost nothing to show for all the amazing observational efforts in terms of genuine fundamental understanding of why the universe is as it is. And it's quite sobering to remember that, I think. To say that in a little bit more detail, this is a similar slide. I've got six parameters here, the ones that are measured, and now I've given you roughly the measured accuracy of them according to the current model. So the densities and Hubble parameters are measured to 1% accuracy. Yeah, the barren density is near to 1% accuracy. We can't explain it to orders of magnitude from a fundamental perspective. Cold dark matter density, just the same. There are plausible candidates. For a few of those candidates, you have a chance at making some general prediction of how much dark matter there should be, like WIMP candidates. Maybe it's of order one or so, but we don't know if WIMPs are right. Not understood at all. The perturbation amplitude is measured to 3% accuracy. The theories we have don't determine it at all. It's governed by the overall normalization of the inflation potential, if inflation is right, but that's not fixed by any principle. And it's only once we get down to the bottom that we start to have some reasonable explanations. The optical depth is measured to about 1 part in 6 and is to be understood as reionization of the gas at relatively high redshifts by the first formations of structure, probably understood to a factor of 2 or so, I would say. There's many simulators in the room who know better than me, but something like that. But it's not actually a fundamental parameter, as I'll come back to in just a second, so that's not so great from that side. And the spectral index is deviation from 1 is a measure to about that same level of accuracy, something like 1 part in 7 or so. It's plausibly explained by inflation in that simple models of inflation will give that particular value of the spectral index. But then again, any value of the spectral index could have been measured and there would be models of inflation that explained it. So it's not a very radical statement. There are some derived parameters which we don't understand very well either. Dark energy density is inferred from all of these things and no one knows how to explain it either. But we do have some general tests that some of the physics we're using is quite good at least. So these are the kinds of physics we put into our calculations, and they're tested to various degrees of accuracy by the fact that we can make calculations and seem to get results which are in agreement with observations. But just to take a measure, things are measured to 1% accuracy or perhaps 10% accuracy. They're explained with 0 accuracy. So, 6-parameter cosmological model. Why 6 and why are we trying so hard to do something different? The main thing to remember in this, I'm talking about parameters throughout, or really I'm talking about models. Parameters are physics. If you have a new parameter, it is some new piece of physics. And it's something that you can try to understand by bringing to bear all your expertise in physical laws. So for example, if someone measured that the dark energy density was varying with redshift, then that would open a new door to trying to figure out something about why that might be true and perhaps linking that to fundamental theories of scalar fields in the universe or whatever. Or if someone found cosmic non-Gaussianity, that might introduce more than one parameter that would tell you something about what happened in the early universe. So it's worth stressing that what we're all kind of hoping to do is to break the standard cosmological model, the six-parameter model, and find something new. The disappointing thing is that we haven't really been achieving that. The same six parameters have been around now for more than a decade, and observational programs that have come in have measured those parameters better and better, but they haven't uncovered any evidence of new parameters. Now, that's all very well, but let me stress again that all six of these parameters have for ages been measured much, much better than any theoretical consideration would possibly need. If the baryon density is measured to 1% accuracy, there is no theoretical interest whatsoever in measuring it to 0.5% accuracy. Even 10% accuracy would have been far too good for us. And the same goes for lots of other parameters as well. So just from the narrow view of being a pure theorist linking to fundamental physics, these observations are not helping us. If you want to learn about phenomenology, of course, then you can think that we've got a big success and we're learning all about how the universe works. So anyway, our goal is to change the six, and my starting point is just to remind you that there are certain things that are inevitable as time goes by, and I just wanted to comment on them to say that that's not really what I'm talking about today. The first thing is that there's kind of a hidden parameter in the six that doesn't get mentioned very often, which is the radiation temperature or radiation density. So I mentioned the baryon density and the cold dark matter density. The dark energy density is then inferred from the assumption of spatial flatness. What about the radiation density? People tend to argue that it's not mentioned because it was measured so accurately by Kobe Firas that we can treat it as a fixed parameter. And that's pretty much true and has been true for practically 30 years now. However, even if that wasn't the case, I think it's in a way not really an independent parameter because its value defines the present moment in our cosmology. So once you fixed all the parameters, you still have a model which progresses with time, and you have to fix where in that time sequence you are before you compare to observations. And so you could kind of interpret the radiation temperature as doing that. So it gets eliminated at that part of the process. So really, you still have six parameters. The optical depth, I was just saying, wasn't really a fundamental parameter. So as simulations improve, it's very reasonable to think that the six-parameter model will become a five-parameter model, because we ought to be able to predict the optical depth from first principles. If you knew all of the physics, formed your structures, formed your quasars, measured your UV output, checked how attenuated it was, transported it out into the intergalactic medium and saw how it ionized everything, then you could hope to measure it. I don't know whether that's a distant hope or a near-time hope. I can see some grimaces in the audience that suggest it's not going to be published tomorrow. But in principle, at least, the optical depth isn't a parameter. There's another parameter which will sort of come and go. It's being argued that the primordial helium fraction is something that we really ought to be considering varying in fits to the cosmic microwave background. It changes the way that the decoupling process happens, and at a subtle level alters the CMB anisotropies. And so in principle, you could hope to measure the helium fraction from the CMB. But again, it's really not independent of the other parameters. If you understood cosmic nucleosynthesis well enough, you should be predicting the helium fraction from first principles anyway, so it doesn't count as an extra parameter. The one thing we do expect and is essentially inevitable in the very near future is that neutrino masses will be measured. They're absolutely on the verge of detection. The upper limits are a factor of 3, perhaps, or 4 away from the lower limits that we have from neutrino oscillation experiments. So neutrino masses will be inevitably detected soon, at least the overall sum of the neutrino masses, giving us one extra parameter and possibly some more details as well. So that's the sort of things that are bound to happen. But what I really want to talk about and what excites people more is what might happen in the future, parameters that we haven't measured and are not necessarily expecting to measure or have no reason to think we will. So I thought about this a long time ago, so this is going back quite a bit in history. This is a slide from a paper in 2004. This is just after the WMAP first year results came out, which I would regard as being the start of the standard cosmological model in 2003. It was the first time lots of parameters were measured to higher precision without new physics being uncovered. So I became interested in the question of really how many parameters were there going to be. And so what I thought was, well, let's see, there can't be that many parameters that people have been considering as possible extensions to the standard cosmological model, could there? And I very rapidly discovered I was completely wrong and had no trouble at all in writing down 24 parameters that had already been tested against the observational data at that time without any of them being detected. And it just took me like an hour or so to compile this. There were so many I had to divide the table into two parts. Above the line are parameters which refer to modifications of the background cosmology, the homogeneous Friedman-Robertson-Walker cosmology. Below the line are parameters that refer to changes in the cosmological perturbations that might be originating from inflation or something else. You can more or less read what the possibilities are. You're aware that many of them have been discussed. There's 24 there in 2004. Since I wrote that paper, only one parameter has been convincingly detected. So WMAP-1 did not detect the spectral index. It measured N as 0.99 with a big error bar that certainly included 1. And the interesting thing for the spectral index is whether it differs from the Herzen-Sadovich value 1 or not. So at the time it wasn't detected, as you're all aware probably by now, it is detected. In fact, it was WMAP-3 in 2006. The first convincingly measured that the first gave very strong indications that the spectral index was different from 1, and then later WMAP and Planck indeed firmed it up as expected. The 2006 was when that one was announced. 2006 was 13 years ago, and in those 13 years, none of these ones or any other ones have been convincingly detected as new physics in cosmological measurements. That's also a sobering thing to think about. 13 years for almost everyone in this room is more than half of your career as an astronomer, as a cosmologist. I suspect there might even be one or two of you in the room for which it might not even be, it might be more than half your life. Certainly close. So cosmology has not been moving very fast. That's Matt leaving in despair. On a slightly more positive note, if you actually look back historically and see how the six parameters were assembled, you can argue that it more or less is one parameter per decade. It's not very accurate. It's not like a Bode's law for planets. But for instance, before this one in 2006 was dark energy density in 1998 from the supernova observations was the previous parameter to be convincingly detected. Before that, it was the amplitude of density perturbations by Kobe in 1992. And then you can argue about when cold dark matter became convincingly an unavoidable part of the standard model, or at least dark matter in some form or another. But only one. I've already mentioned that there's really only one whose detection seems inevitable on this slide, which is some of the neutrino masses. We can expect that within a few years at most, I think. And the only other thing that struck me when I looked at this slide, 2004, was that I had not at all imagined that lots of people would spend almost all of their time working on modified gravity models. There's one modified gravity parameter here, which is hardly ever discussed at all nowadays. So this was all before the enormous explosion of different models of modified gravity, which we have inserted a massive number of extra parameters, functions, and who knows what else into possible consideration of this kind, all without any sign of a detection so far. Okay, I'm going to have to speed up a little bit, I think. The task of deciding between which parameter set you're choosing is known as model selection. There's different ways of doing it. I just wanted to summarize for you so that you know roughly how different people will do it. So when I show you some results, you'll know what's going on. You're trying to decide by what criterion you've measured something new. So there's basically three classes of ways of doing this. One is to make it up, which is what particle physicists like to do, and they tend to use this 5-sigma criterion that if you have a 5-sigma error bar, something is now detected. I can see why they do it, because if you choose a threshold like that, then on one day you haven't detected it, and the next day your measurement gets a bit better and you have measured it, so you have an actual day pretty much, or a run of data, which gives you the detection. And then you have people who can put up their hands and say, I was there that day and I want the Nobel Prize, not these other guys over there. So it does that. So cosmologists like to do this a bit as well because of that definability. But really, there's two well-defined techniques for doing it, which are somewhat at odds. I just mentioned them. My paper in 2004 was thinking about information criteria methods, in particular that wants to introduce the Akaiki information criteria into the cosmological thinking. These are all information theory methods. A good way to think of them is that they're all based around the idea that you have an algorithmic compression of the data. So you have a bunch of data that you've taken, which is some number of bits of information, and you line it up and it's this many bits. And your goal in writing down any kind of model is to replace the data with a model plus the bit of the data that's not explained by your model, which I'd call the data residuals, which might be the random fluctuations, for example. So the model will then itself have some number of bits of information in its specification, and the data residuals will be much less than the data originally, and a good model is one which compresses the data so the total bar is shorter. A worse model here, this is the model is more complicated, requires more bits to specify it. It leaves slightly less data residuals than this, but the total is longer, so this is a bad model. A better model might be more complicated than this one if the data residuals are shorter. In this case, the last model is the bottom one. So that's a kind of way to think about the information criterion methods. I've done some things with that, but more popular in astronomy and cosmology are Bayesian methods, where instead the aim is to assign a probability to everything that you can think of, and the goal is to give some measure of the probability at the end. Yes?
How do you define the number of bits in a model? Just the number of parameters, or...?
In principle, it's the number of bits of the computer code that implements your model, I think. But there's lots of different ways of implementing this and dispute around it. And also, data can mean different things as well. It's only really once you've said what your likelihood is that you've specified what form your data's in. So for CMB, the data alone usually doesn't mean the time-ordered data stream. It might mean a map. It might mean a power spectrum. So there's lots of different things that can even be meant by the data on its own. Bayesian methods are the rival, probably more popular, where you just assign probabilities to everything, and a quantity called the Bayesian evidence measures the probability of the model. So you're attaching here probabilities to the sets of parameters as well as to the values of the parameters. I have a probability that this bunch of 8 parameters is the correct description of what's going on. I'm going to zip past that one and very quickly mention one recent interesting use of the Bayesian evidence. I think it's worth highlighting if people haven't seen it. We used it in Dark Energy Survey. It's a way of testing for compatibility of two data sets. You may, for instance, hear a lot about the Hubble tension, where different observations can't seem to quite agree on what the value of the Hubble parameter is. And there's a statistic that got invented, which looks like this. The probability of your two data sets, given some model, divided by the probability of data set one, times the probability of data set two. And the words that go with this are, the numerator is saying the two data sets are consistent. I'm taking one cosmological model, say with 6 parameters, and fitting it to the data and asking how probable that data is. On the numerator, I'm instead saying these data sets live in completely different universes with different parameter values. And what I'm going to do is fit the parameter values of model one and work out the data probability. And then I'm going to fit model two using what could be different values of the parameters. And your sense of whether there's a tension or not is whether these different data sets more or less give the same parameters or not. Now, when I saw that, I thought that was a bit bewildering, because if the data sets are in tension, it should be either someone's data is wrong or it is because the model is not good enough, the model's not general enough to cope with the data that's coming in, and it's evidence we should extend the model. Neither of these seems to be explained by this different universe thing, which doesn't reflect reality. But cunningly, by Bayes' theorem, you can rewrite this in a different way, which is quite helpful. You can just use Bayes' theorem to shift the data over there and cancel out one term in the denominator. And the real interpretation of this is it's telling you how probable is your new data given the old data in the model, and comparing that to how probable your new data was if you didn't have the old data. So it's sort of asking how much did the old data help you in explaining your new data? And the ratio of probabilities there is a measure of that. And we find that that's quite helpful, I think, when interpreted like that.
Is that symmetric in D1 and D2?
And it also shows it will be symmetric in D1 and D2 because you can invert Bayes' theorem either way, which you wouldn't have guessed either. Yeah, but of course it is, yeah. So you'll get the same probability of 1 and 2 will be equal to each other. Okay, I'm almost out of time, so I just wanted to show you some results that use some of these ideas. This can be very quick. Dark Energy Survey, year one data, the first thing we wanted to look at was the equation of state parameter W, whose cosmological constant value is minus 1. This is the result we got, minus 1.00 plus or minus this and this. Clearly, no evidence for any deviation from the cosmological constant value. It doesn't even have the decency to scatter according to the error bar. It's like completely on minus 1. And the next decimal place, which we didn't quote in the paper, is actually also a 0 as well. To be even more annoying, you have to go to the fourth decimal place to get something that's not a 0. And even that's a 1. Unbelievable. So no evidence for anything other than the cosmological constant. The ratio of evidence is for a model of the cosmological constant versus the equation of state parameter is 0.1, saying the cosmological constant is 10 times as likely as a varying equation of state for this data. I'm going to zoom through phenomenological modified gravity. This is very much for experts. So there's two parameters people often use for phenomenological fits to try and go beyond Einstein gravity, sigma naught and mu naught, which measure the effect on relativistic and non-relativistic tracers, either respectively or anti-respectively, depending which way I manage to say that. General relativity has zero values for both of them where that crosses. The blue is our main result. This is from a paper in 2018 using CFHT lens data. These are the constraints on the parameters marginalized. You can see that the central values are consistent with zero within one sigma in this case. Finally, dark energy extensions paper we produced towards the end of last year, October 2018. We looked at four different possible extensions: curvature, relativistic species, dynamical dark energy now with two parameters, W naught, WA, the so-called CPL parameterization, and again the modified gravity model now. This is with dark energy survey year one data. And you can look at all of the numbers, and if you did look at all the numbers, you'd find that even none of those have the decency to scatter by as much as one sigma away from zero, which by now is almost sounding like a conspiracy, that there should at least be some of them that are one sigma away. If we weren't so ruthless in blinding the data before revealing the final measurements, I would really start to be suspicious there was some confirmation bias. But because the data were ruthlessly blinded, I don't really see how that can be the case. Here's some plots that go with it that show that actually the DES data doesn't do very much at all for these measurements except for the modified gravity. But I want to end on one note here. This is W naught WA. DES doesn't do very much. It's the blue here. The combined data with CMB and supernova and stuff is the red. If you compute the probability of the model W naught WA, the CPL parameterization, against a cosmological constant, its probability is 0.006. There's less than 1% chance that dark energy varies with redshift according to that model in this analysis. And this is actually the first and only time I've ever managed to get something which on the so-called Jeffries scale goes beyond 5, a difference of that the logarithm is 5, which Jeffries called a decisive result, and it acts against the dynamical dark energy model in favor of the cosmological constant model. This has not really been emphasized enough, but we basically already know that almost certainly the dark energy is not dynamical based on existing observations. So anyone who's hoping to find that in future observations is all set to be disappointed.
But the worse my measurement, like the lower this number gets, is that right?
The lower that number gets, the more improbable the dark energy model becomes against the cosmological
constant. You know, this number gets smaller, doesn't it?
If you do a worse experiment, this is the probability. Do you mean a more constraining experiment?
If or I use my phone to measure, like, W, the error will be enormous. But
it will contribute negligibly towards this. And the likelihood all comes from the data that's actually constraining. Unconstraining data has no effect on a Bayesian ratio. It normalizes out on the numerator and the denominator, okay. So that you won't find anything. So I better end, because I'm overrun. Conclusion. We're spending a lot of time trying to make the universe give us interesting new physics. It is not playing ball. And that's it. Thank you.